Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show. Any plans for New Year's?
New Year's, Not exactly yet, but no. I kind of feel like that's one of those things that'll just come together a little closer to last minute.
What's your best New Year's ever?
I don't have great New Year's. New Year's is often like July 4th for me, where it's just like, this is sad. Yeah, it's never like the best or anything. I'm like, oh, let's eat something off a grill and stand here. And look at the fireworks as everything's raining down trash from the sky.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
I'm
a sad sack.
Good Lord. Yeah. Anti-American.
I'm over here with my communist manifesto.
Yeah, for God's sakes, just put it away one day a year. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the last podcast of 2019.
Of what year?
I'm sorry. Did I say 2019?
You did.
I did that thing that people do
beforehand
where they go, oh, I wrote 2018. It's really 2019. I already
did it backwards.
Fast forwarded us into 2019. Let's try that again. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the last podcast of 2018.
Nice.
My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Combined Fund Drive, and this is...
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Yes, and this is Podcast for Good. Today we are talking about an issue that is a really like a mystery, and that is the issue of mental health.
Fact.
Yeah. So as a person who has had family members who've dealt with mental health issues, and as a person who has actually, you know, grown up with anxiety myself, this is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, because we're going to do this again specifically, right, for mental health for women and mental health for men next year.
We are.
So I'm going to save my opinions on toxic masculinity and how you get judged as a man specifically for your mental health issues. I'm going to save that
for that particular one. Okay.
But people who know me and people who have gotten close to me know that I have had a panic attack before that really helped define where I was going to go. And then, like I said, I've dealt with family members who've had mental illness or mental health problems. And so it's a pretty it's a pretty prevalent issue.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the reason why I say it's mysterious is because it seems like we don't really know, like, there's no way to tell where the origin is, and there's no way to tell, like, how exactly you nail it down.
Yeah, you have to dig in, and it's not always just, I feel sad, therefore I'm depressed.
Yeah.
It's not that simple ever.
Right.
So it's all those factors, you know, like, what kind of environment are you in, at work, at home, who do you spend your time with, what do people say to you when you're talking with them, you know, how are you treated? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much to it.
Yeah, yeah, and like, it is really what separates us from almost any other animal on Earth is our ability to personalize, internalize, make judgments, think we're getting judged.
Yeah.
We could do all the genome research in the world, and mental health is just not something I feel like we'll ever maybe be able to feel like we can get, like, solved.
Yeah, I think that that's kind of one of those, you have to use all the, like, senses in order to really kind of get a better grasp on how to handle it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, you're feeling, you're perceiving, you have to be able to use that stuff. Not just the stuff that's like statistics. This says that you should be feeling this way because this is your environment.
Yeah, yeah.
You grew up with money. You should be happy.
Yeah. The brain's a tricky thing, people.
It is a tricky thing.
The brain is a tricky thing. It can trick you into a lot of realities that aren't true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of what we're dealing with today. We talked to two organizations. We talked to the Seneca Family of Agencies, the Director of Program Innovation. What an awesome title, by the way.
Do you want to change your title?
To the Director of Program Innovation?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Kate Walker. And then we talked to the Washington Vocational Services, Janet Bruckshin, the Executive Director, and Laura Cox, the Executive Assistant. Mm-hmm. And so we talked to two organizations who really actually... We did not do this on purpose. They really actually tackle two separate points of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And that is for Seneca Family of Agencies. That is the younger demographic, K-8 education. They're mostly in schools. And then for Washington Vocational Services, it's actually getting people employment.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Before we get into either one of mm-hmm. those, though, as usual, as it has been, Ms. Lucas has a question of the podcast.
I do. All right. So movies and TV shows, you're a big fan.
It's my wheelhouse.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes they poorly portray characters with mental health disorders or issues.
Correct.
So what character have you seen in movies or TV recently or just ever who's experienced mm-hmm. an aspect of mental illness that you thought, oh, this is what it actually looks like. This is an accurate portrayal of mental illness.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't do good.
No, they don't. They do not.
Movies and television do not do mental health good.
It's like stereotypes.
Yeah. They really do a great job of stereotyping the crap out of people with mental health issues. That's for sure.
Kind of stereotyping the crap out of people in general.
Really just all people in general. understanding that, you know, you have like a finite window to present your story,
sure.
so you can't like go into the heavy intricacies of an individual. There still is not a lot out there of like good shows or good movies that I've watched where you go like, wow, they really nailed what that is all about.
Yeah.
I would say if you're talking about movies, even though the character never full on actually says out loud that they have mental health issues. Mm-hmm. That clearly almost every single person in the movie has mental health issues, and that's American Beauty.
Oh, okay.
Right? I mean, literally everybody in there has mental health problems.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a movie essentially about everybody having mental health problems. Kevin Spacey and then the neighbor well. Chris Cooper.
There we go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the ex-Marine who may have PTSD and then mm-hmm. also, you know, dealing with his son being kind of also having mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole movie's about mental health.
Yeah.
But I would say TV-wise, mm-hmm. Probably the more accurate... more accurate sort of portrayal of like what it's sort of physically like to have mental sort of health issues and anxiety is actually the first couple seasons of Rescue Me.
Oh, okay.
With Dennis Leary. He always kind of, you know, he sneaky does it really good. He did it kind of on The Job. It was a weirdly like sort of non-scene TV show. And then his best one was Rescue Me. He'd have these sort of, they felt like visions or dreams of like people who had passed away in a fire mm-hmm. or whatever, but they felt super real. And then he'd wake up and it was almost like what happens when you go through a panic attack or anxiety. You physically feel it. So that would be my guy. What about you?
I always thought Homicide, Life on the Street. Oh, you remember that show?
That's a great show,
right?
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, those first couple seasons were amazing. And Andre Brower,
he was amazing.
So I just thought like, you know, the way that he would deal with those kinds of, I'm a cop, these things are terrible.
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
Like, he would have these kind of breakdowns and meltdowns and these emotional moments and be like, oh, yeah, you're having a problem containing
that. He was amazing on that show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was
fact.
Yeah.
Come on the show.
Yeah. yeah. We can talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine now.
Yeah, we can.
Which is great.
Because he's another
show.
Police officer.
Great show.
But as far as movies, I was actually kind of surprised. Iron Man 2. When Tony Stark has a panic attack.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, it's one of those, what is happening to me?
Yes.
I have to escape. I have to get out of here. You have those little triggers that, like, just pop up, and it's like, oh, everything's melting down.
Yeah. Don't you feel like Iron Man is close to Batman in terms of like dealing with a superhero psychology?
I think so, yeah.
Right? Because like Tony Stark what was kind of cool was, like, he does the Iron Man 1, and, you know, he's just becoming the superhero's sort of standard storyline. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about 2 and 3 is that he begins to deal with this whole, like, oh my god, there are actual aliens invading the planet, or we've created, like, a sinister robot. Like, he deals with it the way a human being would deal with it.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. That's a good one. Yeah. And, like, some people kind of poo-poo it because they're like, well, it's, you know, it's superhero comic book movies. Yeah. But... Yeah,
there's no substance
agreed.
There.
I kind of agreed.
No,
like,
is.
He loses it a little.
He loses
bit,
it.
You know, he the threads start to show. I think, it's a good one. Really good one. And then kind of Christian Bale from Batman, the first one, where he's kind of a little bit like dealing with it all. Batman in general usually does that.
Yeah.
He's always pretty brooding and has mental health issues.
He is not a morning person.
No. No. Or a people person.
No, not really. No.
So if you, as usual, I'm going to pose this question to Twitter like it matters, because you people never do it anyway. You can hit us up at WaStateCFD. Let's say hashtag mental health characters. I don't know. We're just going to say that.
That works.
And Jerrica hates when I do that.
I think it's funny.
I think it is,
I also like to tell her right after we record these what the hashtag is and watch her roll her eyes.
Hashtag Iron Man mental health.
Hashtag ugh.
Hashtag shout out Jerrica. So without any further ado, we're going to send it to our very first, very interesting interview over the phone with Kate Walker, the Director of Program Innovation for Seneca Family of Agencies. Here it is. All right, folks. So our first charity of the day is Kate Walker from Seneca Family of Agencies. She is the Director of Program Innovation. Kate, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Philip. Very happy to be here with you and Heather this morning.
Yeah, so can you talk to us a little bit about the history of Seneca Family of Agencies and what it is you guys do for the community?
Absolutely. Seneca Family of Agencies was founded actually in Oakland, California in 1985. With a really simple, but we like to think very powerful mission, and that's to help children and families through some of the most difficult times of their lives. And so, like I said, simple but really powerful in practice. And so we've actually grown from a really small residential and day treatment program to actually a provider of a robust continuum of services ranging from mental health and education, juvenile justice and adoption and permanency services.
Mm-hmm.
And so really at the core of what we do, we're guided by a value and a philosophy that we call unconditional care. And that's this idea of doing whatever it takes to help children and families thrive, even when faced with tremendous challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has really been our guiding principle over the last 33 years. And in more recent years, we've taken that unconditional care philosophy and really expanded it into this, a new unconditional education model. And so really driven with our expertise in mental health and behavior, but addressing how do we tackle this in the education setting. And so our unconditional education model, for a little bit of background, that incorporates a multi-tier system of support to foster inclusive educational settings. And so really focused on increasing the achievement and well-being of struggling students, as well as improving the school culture and climate to benefit all students.
Mm-hmm.
And so far too often we find our school systems sort of separate the youth that have really high needs or struggling needs, or provide youth those services in silos. And we really believe that there's benefit to providing the support to all students. So all students from a mental health standpoint could benefit from social emotional learning, in addition to making sure that the high needs youth are also getting the support and services that they need.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit of a background
and
context for Seneca Family of Agencies. But we've actually are new to Washington. We came to Washington in 2013, initially to support charter public schools.
Oh, yeah.
Meeting the needs of students with disabilities and other barriers to academic achievement. achievement.
Wow.
And so we have a really strong partnership with the charter schools, and also have since then partnered with other district schools, and so work with one of the largest school districts in the state, really to institute system-wide changes in the design and delivery of special education services. So again, we provide really extensive mental health and behavioral and academic services on that, like a direct care level, but also really work with organizations and systems on a macro level to look at systems-wide changes.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you work, so it sounds like you work mostly in sort of the high school demographics. Is that sound, is that correct?
We actually work in Washington, quite a few K through five or K eight schools.
Okay.
And so we're in, currently in 23 schools, 11 charter schools and 12 district schools.
Got it. Got it.
And so that early identification, of youth with needs, as well as kind of that, that really basic sort of social, emotional, mental health, behavioral support, we really feel like is critical at the early ages.
And did you find that charter schools, it sounds like charter schools were more receptive to it at the beginning than perhaps even public schools were?
I think we were initially, we were initially brought up to partner with charter schools.
Yeah.
And so I think that for us, Washington, our experience in Washington has been really enjoyable because it was different.
Yeah.
It was a really strong education focus, whereas historically we are known in California as the mental health and behavioral experts.
So got it.
We notoriously serve the youth with the highest, most complex needs, the youth that have unfortunately been failed by multiple systems time and time again. And so that's the expertise there. And so the charter schools in Washington really gave us an opportunity to help support and build out their special education services. And so Washington, as you may know, charter schools are serving higher proportionate youth with special needs. And so we have aligned really strongly with them around how do you support those youth with high needs, with also with like a trauma-informed education lens.
So let me ask you one more question kind of about the demographics you work with. So we obviously are hearing a lot about mental health, which has been pretty fantastic to see high-profile people come out and kind of talk about their own mental health struggles. It strikes me that mental health struggles do start in the ages that you kind of cater to. Have you noticed that sort of overwhelmingly? I mean, the more and more kids that you reach and more kids that you connect with, are you seeing evidence that if you can get to kids at the age that you have, that you can actually legitimately turn some of these instances around?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But we also have to recognize that our youth are in complex systems. And so many of our youth struggling with mental health needs, you know, they're our students with, you know, special education needs. Mm-hmm. They have backgrounds of, you know, complex or chronic stress and trauma as a result of domestic or community violence, economic insecurity. So we see a huge rise in homelessness, as well as ongoing systemic racism, English language literacy, you name it, right? The schools are faced with so many complex issues. And so we are seeing a rise in mental health needs across youth as well. I mean, like you mentioned, especially at an early age. And so I think, you know, our systems, our schools are tasked do so much, right? Educate our youth, but also create and support the whole being of the youth. And so what we find is that, unfortunately, our schools don't have the resources and the expertise to provide youth with the really high complex needs, as well as just pervasive mental health needs of growing population of youth at that young age. And so we're seeing a rise in anxiety and depression across the board. And so that's why at Seneca, we really believe that if we can push in and align with schools and provide what we call tier one supports, and tier one supports benefit all youth. And so every youth in a school setting, five years old up to 18, benefits from a social-emotional curriculum, benefits from understanding early warning signs of mental health and how to talk with providers and how to get that support. And so we believe that the more that we can be supporting schools and building their capacity around providing that support to all youth, what you're going to find is that there are going to be fewer youth on that higher end of the spectrum that are going to be requiring more intensive services.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
So I was looking at your guys' website and found the wraparound program was something that you guys did. Can you talk a little more about the wraparound program and what it is?
Yeah, definitely. So the wraparound concept is about building around a child or a youth natural support and strength. And so we have a pretty robust wraparound actual service in California, and really in Washington, the wraparound philosophy and modality really drives the work that we do. And so when we work with a youth, we can't work with them in a silo. So while we have incredible clinicians with expertise in, you know, mental health, while they're working with a young person, you're not going to see a change if you're only meeting with them once a week for an hour.
Yeah.
So the wraparound concept is, how do we pull in their family or caregivers, or maybe it's a member from their local church who has a really strong and positive influence. It's connecting maybe their psychiatrist or psychologist, or additional support. So this idea that that cross-sector collaboration, we can't be making a difference or supporting the youth if we're not working together, working collaboratively, and more importantly, the wraparound model is this idea that we're building upon the strength of the community. So what are the resilient pieces of a youth? How do we help the youth recognize what are some of their protective factors and their strengths? And, you know, far too often we live in a society where it's very deficit-driven, right? What's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or you're missing this, or this is inadequate. But the wraparound model looks at, well, what do you bring to the table? What are your strengths? And then how do we help you build upon those strengths to be able to be empowered to get the support and to grow in the ways that you deserve and need?
Nice.
That's awesome. So according to a report that was in 2018 for, it was Mental Health America is what it was called, we, Washington State, ranked 34th in the country in higher prevalence of mental illness and less access to care. So we are not doing excellent, it sounds like, at this particular part. Do you think in working in this field that there is a lack of mental health providers in our state? Do you find that, I mean, in your line of work?
I think so there's a lack of resources, access to the support.
Yes.
So that's what we see as a strong barrier. And so we work with a lot of schools and organizations that recognize the need. There's so many other barriers for the youth to be able to access, or for youth and families to be able to access the support to the mental health component. And so I think that that's the real focus that we have, is how do we help to break down those barriers.
What kind of barriers have you seen within your client base?
I think that there's quite a few barriers just in terms of stigma around mental health.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the communities we work with, and even the society in general, I think we're improving, but still we have a long ways to go to be able to say, it's okay if, you're struggling with depression or anxiety, or actually you're struggling in school because of some of the complex trauma that you experienced. And so helping to first say mental health support is really just giving you that extra TLC in many ways, the skills, the space to process those things. So I think that breaking down the stigma of mental health is a barrier. We also find that, I spoke a little bit about just sort of silos of mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Again, if we look at a school system, a young person may be able to get access to mental health service once a week, but unless it's integrated, unless teachers are also teaching our students through a trauma-informed lens, then the work that you do in a one-off mental health session or access, you know, other, your social skills pieces in the school setting either. And then I think there's just general barriers to lack of knowledge or awareness about what services are available. You have the basic barriers just in terms of how to get to the services. And so, you know, how do I get to an outpatient clinic if I don't have means of transportation? And so, again, that's why we do a lot of work in the school setting, because the schools where youth are going to spend the majority of their waking hours pushing in and providing that support there is another way in which we attempt to break down the barrier. And then I think you also have to look at the barriers of just intergenerational mental health issues, you know, systems of oppression. I mean, there's tons of pieces of things we need to be looking at, even just from a systems lens, and looking it through the lens of kind of just general diversity, equity, inclusion. How are we breaking down mental health through that lens as well?
Yeah, I love your first the first point you made about the stigma. I feel like one of the biggest things that happens as from anxiety, or one of the biggest factors in anxiety, is thinking that you're the only one who's thinking these thoughts, and if you say them out loud, you will be judged harshly for them. And I think that ends up creating more and more layers of anxiety, because you feel like you're the only one dealing with it. And I think that that's something that hopefully, as we begin to learn what anxiety is and what mental health is and how we can change that, I think that that's a really good thing to look at.
Yeah, and we can start by modeling it, right?
Yeah.
Because we all have our own things that cause us anxiety or to get us down. And how can we, as adults, begin to normalize that?
Exactly.
And to speak more openly about it.
That's right.
Be more curious about that is definitely a way in which we can start to break down those stigmas.
Yeah, a little bit talk about what you're feeling at the moment, and realize that it's not a bad thing to be feeling that, and that other people are feeling the exact same thing. I think that's
good point. I think that's why when I talk about sort of the pushing into schools and helping all youth around like a social emotional curriculum, it's really the basics of how do I feel right now, being able to express that, and that's okay. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to be sad.
Right.
What can I do when I'm having those feelings? And so that's a lot of the work that we do in early education is just to be able to make that more of a common and comfortable thing to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. So talk a little bit more about that. So let's say we have some folks who are experiencing pain and distress and anxiety. You kind of just hit on it with one of the really easy things that folks can do, and that is to normalize the conversation about how you're feeling. But what are some other things that folks can do to get immediate help?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we work with, you know, I speak a lot about youth, and that's who we focus on, but youth and families, you know, who's your support network, right? And so is there someone within your family, within your friend circle that you can talk to, right? That's a key piece. And then it's also helping to understand what is a good way for people to express that. You know, some people can express, you know, what are their coping skills, I guess is a better way of saying it.
Yeah.
So what are their interests? Are you a writer? Are you a painter? Are you a singer? Are you athletic? You know, what are those pieces of how do you make sure that on a proactive side you have a self-care plan in place, that you recognize your go-to list of coping skills and strategies? And so that's on a very basic ongoing level. How do you make sure that you are turning to those things when you're beginning to feel some of those emotions?
Yeah.
And then I think the other piece is to not be afraid to reach out to ask for help, either for yourself or to on behalf of a loved one. And there are incredible organizations throughout the state of Washington that do some really phenomenal work. And, you know, how do we, how can you not just reach out or help a loved one reach out? And sometimes that's what we need to do, is we ourselves may not be able to or not think we need to, but how can we help others with that?
Yep, yep.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Seneca Family of Agencies. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Definitely. And so any level of donation goes directly to the work that we do with youth. And so a donor in Washington, a small donation could go to sensory tools. So as basic as how can we allow some of our youth to have more access to, as they talk about, coping skills and sensory tools to develop those self-regulation and de-escalation techniques. We also, donations can go to help support our youth and access to sort of outings with their families, or, you know, our youth work really hard on behavioral contracts as it relates to their mental health needs. And so donations can lead to the support of a youth and a family member doing something really positive for once. And then in our community-based programs, you know, I spoke a lot about schools, but we also have community-based programs. And so donations go to some of the basic needs, helping our youth get access to the transportation to get them to school or to work. And so that is a great way where donations can help.
Very nice.
Excellent. Excellent. So, Kate, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
We spoke about a lot of our school work, but I do also want to mention that we also do the community-based work. And so two programs that we have in partnership with King County is around our outreach program for commercially sexually exploited youth.
Mm-hmm.
So we work to upstream and do early identification of youth who are at risk or suspected or confirmed in cases of commercial sexual exploitation. So we work with providers on how to identify some of the early at-risk and warning signs, as well as how to provide some of that direct service and care to these young women and to these youth through empowerment groups, as well as how to make some of the system-wide changes around that. And then also in our community-based work, we have a partnership with Ryther Center for Children and Youth and in a juvenile justice assessment team. And so our JJAT team aims to divert youth from behavioral needs, divert youth with behavioral needs from further involvement in the juvenile justice system.
Yeah.
And so through assessment, we're able to assess for mental health needs as well as substance abuse needs and really create a thoughtful plan on how to get these youth the support and resources and services that they need to further prevent involvement with the juvenile justice system. And so that's just a little bit more about some of the work that we're doing
awesome.
In Washington.
Awesome. Well, that's really, really noble work you're doing, Kate. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and good luck to you and the Seneca family to keep it going.
Thank you, Heather and Philip. I really have enjoyed having a chance to speak with you today.
Awesome. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, and that was the interview with Kate Walker, the Director of Program Innovation with Seneca Family of Agencies. And we're going to dive into our interview with Janet from Washington Vocational Services and her executive assistant, Laura. So here is that interview now.
So we're here this morning with Washington Vocational Services, Janet Bruckshin, the Executive Director, and Laura Cox, Executive Assistant. Welcome. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you
very
much. We're excited.
So can you give us a little history about Washington Vocational Services and what you do for the community?
Absolutely. So Washington Vocational Services started in 1976, same year the Seahawks started.
Oh, right off the bat. Good start.
Declaring allegiance.
That's right. So we have been, we celebrated our 40th anniversary 2 years ago, and we, our mission is to support individuals in becoming employed in the community. So we match, we support employers and customers in finding the right job match. So we work with individuals with developmental disabilities, individuals with mental health disorders, also transitional individuals who come to us and are just more of a kind of a revolving door kind of thing, where they come in and maybe they just need a little support with independent living skills or resume building. And maybe don't necessarily need the full support in helping them obtain a job. We do a program called Dream Builders, where we go into middle schools and start talking to individuals who are in school programs for individuals with disabilities, and we start talking to them about, you know, building their career path, kind of ways that they can get involved in starting to kind of think about what they want to do, so that by the time an individual graduates from high school, they are employed by the time they leave. So there's not that gap where a lot of people were falling through the cracks, kind of sitting at home and getting used to Xbox and things like that.
Yeah.
And then a lot of independent living skills where we help people kind of get rid of barriers that may be standing in the way of employment. So, you know, an individual might need to learn to do money management or mm-hmm. help with their Social Security. There's a lot of individuals who just have a real fear of going to work because they don't want to lose their benefits. And so mm-hmm. we can help them kind of navigate that system and, yeah. and help them, you know, get rid of that fear. So a real a variety of programs. We have a yeah. transitional program for students with disabilities.
And yeah.
What am I missing? We do a lot of stuff.
Yes To program, work with individuals that are blind or low vision. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they come around from the state of Washington. Individuals who are blind will come from the ages of 14 to 18.
Okay.
And we help them find internships in the summer, like cool. a six-week program where they learn work habits and skills. Mm-hmm. They get paid for it. Learn how to take their bus. Maybe it's the first time they're away from home in many cases. Yeah. So we kind of help them navigate that. And so a lot of programs like that. We specialize yeah. with individuals with deaf services and individuals who are deaf-blind, okay. Low vision.
And where do you guys do most of your services? Do you go? Are you statewide, or do you have a presence?
We work kind of up and down the I-5 corridor. From we work in 8 different counties, so uh-huh. we have an office in Burlington, Skagit County, King County is a big office for us. Snohomish County is our main hub, mm-hmm. and then we're also in Clark County, Island, and San Juan.
Mm. Nice. Excellent! Wow. Yeah. Okay. So in your experience, how large a role do stigmas play when someone's looking to receive treatment for mental health? So, we just talked about it with the person we interviewed. One of the mm-hmm. biggest things that I've learned with anxiety is, that part of your anxiety is the fact that you think no one else is going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so your anxiety builds on itself. Do you see that as well as being a pretty big role in terms of, like, what are people going to think of me, that sort of thing, when it comes to mental health?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, from the interview all the way through mm-hmm. Retention, I think that plays a huge role in it. But, you know, the thing with mental health diagnosis is a lot of it is the stigma. You know, we have the ADA, and we can go in and really advocate for employees with employers, but with individuals with mental health, a lot of times it's those invisible
yeah,
disabilities.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, sometimes it's as far as our support for individuals, it could be as simple as calling the employer ahead of time and just saying, you know, if the person has said we could disclose.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of what you might see. Mm-hmm. We helped this one individual through a position and talked to the employer shortly prior and said, you might notice a little anxious during it, kind of bounces a little bit off the seat, but, uh-huh. you know, great skills. He's going to bring a lot of transferable skills. And after the interview, the individual got the job. And after the interview, he mentioned that had that not been kind of, preemptive of the interview, he would not have.
Wow.
Considered him just
wow.
because of, you know, the basics
yeah, because,
that your
yeah.
employers look like eye contact.
And, yeah.
And so just kind of that knowledge, I think.
Sure.
Boy, that is really interesting. Yeah. Yeah, because, like, think about how nerve-wracking it is for just anyone to mm-hmm. go into a job interview.
Yeah, right.
Because that is, you're literally being judged.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, true.
So,
yeah, a lot of those interviews bring out more anxiety
yeah.
for individuals. Mm-hmm. And you know,
I would imagine
yeah.
that. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, stigma, you know, and we always, when we do our philosophy training and train our employment consultants or the individuals who are out there, mm-hmm. you know, knocking on doors and finding opportunities for people, one of the biggest things we talk to them about is just perceptions
yeah.
and that our role is, you know, very much changing perceptions. It's we've come a long way in the field, but, you know, there's a lot of people who just still, you know, their response will be, well, I tried that. I did hire an individual, you know, 5 years ago, as mm-hmm. if everybody is, you know, they're going to have the same exact experience
yeah.
because they had mm-hmm. tried it. So a lot of the training we do with employment consultants is just how can you go in and first we help them identify what their own perceptions are, because we all have our own as well based
yeah.
on people we know in our past
yep.
or so it's knowing that about ourselves and then being able to go out and
yeah.
Work with employers on changing their perceptions. And mm-hmm. with people with mental health, it's also helping them change their own perceptions. Because
yeah.
A lot of people are like, you know, maybe it's something they've heard throughout their life or just their own experience. But, mm-hmm. I don't think I can work.
Yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. kind of,
yeah.
Do you want to? Yes. Well, then you can.
Yeah.
and just helping them find out what that is.
Yeah. So. Nice.
So a lot of times, I'm sorry, mental illness, the stigma behind that, since it is usually non, you know, something you can't see.
Right.
Yeah.
Those individuals are usually blamed and held responsible for their behavior. So there are times that we can actually go into an employer and do some disability awareness training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that, you know, it's sometimes we bridge the gap between the employer and the employee, because mm-hmm. sometimes employees are shy and don't want to disclose information to the employer, so we can help bridge the gap and make the communication easier.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Just excellent. That education, I think, with employers, you know, many people believe, oh, if this individual has a mental health diagnosis, they're more prone to be violent, and mm-hmm. and statistics are actually, they're more, actually more liable to be a victim of violence in many cases. So sometimes it's just that educating the employer,
right. And get rid of that stigma way. And that yeah. idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you found it easy to match a client you're working with the correct therapy services that they need?
Outside of work type of?
Yeah. Well, actually let's tweak that question a bit. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, let's tweak it. Have you found it, how hard is it for you to match a client with an employer? Like, who might have mental illness? I mean, what are some of the steps you go through to try and make that connection?
I think the main thing is just finding the right job match and mm-hmm. really knowing. And a lot of it has to do with the individual disclosing mm-hmm. what they need. There's a lot of fear in that. But oftentimes, if it's the right environment, that mm-hmm. disclosure is huge. I mean, a coworker's not going to know. You know, the HR department of a job yeah. may know, well, this person, you know, we've arranged their schedule so that this person isn't driving at night, for example.
If mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
They have PTSD.
PTSD,
right. and we're involved in an accident. And
sure.
And so coworkers look at that as, I don't understand why we're all, you know, you're right. have to do that, but they don't. And so a lot of times that can lead to, it creates its own difficulties within the mm-hmm. environment unintentionally. So I think a lot of it is just finding that right match, working with the individual on what to disclose and when to disclose, being that advocate between the employer and the person. I think with mental health, the biggest thing has not been obtaining the job. It's been retaining the job.
Oh,
so going
okay.
in and finding out, you know, and in some cases an individual might be doing really well, got the job of their dreams, everything's going well, and then they suddenly think, you know, I'm doing pretty well, I'm going to stop my medication.
Yes, or, right.
You know, my work's interfering with my ability to see counseling. So it's kind of being able to go in there. And unfortunately, a lot of times the system where we run into issues with, like, funding is that a person has that short-term funding available for us to help them find the job.
Sure.
But oftentimes it's keeping it, and so right. funding is not often available.
Yeah,
so we have to be real creative.
Yeah, because that's a whole other set of pressures is keeping
oh, yeah.
the job.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, getting the job is one thing, but feeling like you can continue to contribute, you're not going to, you know, the walls don't close in on you, that's a whole other
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I think my experience I used to be an employment consultant and worked with individuals at getting them jobs. I feel like the retention was more difficult than actually getting the job itself.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there particular employers that you guys work with that you feel like, I know full well that these folks, do you have targeted employers that, you know, I have an individual who's come to me and I know that this work setting will be really good for them? Do you guys do that?
A bit. So because we've been around for 42 years, we have established a really large employer network. And so if somebody comes in and their, career goal is very specific and one of our employers who's been very supportive kind of comes to mind, then absolutely we would start there. But we are very individualized and really try to find out so that we're not just kind of
shoving them into like an
yeah.
employer.
So a little bit of both,
okay.
I would say.
Yeah.
Some of the biggest challenges are just making sure that the individual has, especially with individuals with mental health, it's really a wraparound kind of support system. And so once they're employed, it's the employer, an advocate, and then just making sure they're continuing with whatever outside support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately in Washington, there's a lot of, there's a shortage of psychiatrists. A lot of family practitioners are mm-hmm. Supporting individuals with, like, depression.
Yeah.
And not that there's not some that are really effective, but they're not specializing
That's right.
In some of that. So So a lot of times that's kind of where we see more of the, you know, support needed is kind of access to services. We're also, you know, it's also very much a crisis kind of, you know, we deal with crisis at a time instead of a lot of prevention. I know the governor's really kind of working on that. It's been in the news a lot. Trying to really support the state and becoming more of a preventative thing. But, you know, it makes it tough. And sometimes on jobs, we can place somebody and things are great. We fade out and, you know, we just, everything's great. And then 8 months down the road, we'll get a phone call that there's a crisis. And then it's unfortunately jumping through all the hoops of getting the person referred to us again. And many times, you know, it's a need you right now type of thing. So we jump in and support an individual and you know, because it's, you know, it's just a as needed kind of right now crisis situation.
Excellent. So what tools does your organization use to assist a client with their mental health needs? Knowing, of course, that you guys aren't, you know, the psychiatrist, if you will, but what do you guys have in your toolbox, so to speak, that helps folks with their mental health needs?
Well, that wraparound kind of thing, we identify who those people are in the person's system as much as possible so that we really can, we know that, you know, we tell our job coaches, your job is to coach your way out of a job so that you're not needed. So we do a lot of training on how to identify natural supports within the workplace. So say we place an individual and it's time for us to leave. We work really hard to find maybe a coworker, maybe a supervisor who we can train basically on, you know, we're going to be leaving now. Things seem to be going well. You're meeting, you know, this individual's meeting the expectations of the job. Everybody's happy, but here's some things to look for. Here's some, you know, just try to find that advocate within and help them build the skills they need to do that. But you know, I think a lot of it is the support is in helping them find the right job. And oftentimes we're doing a lot with them just to help them identify what their strengths are. A lot of people come in and, you know, because of various things, they really don't know what they want to do. So we do like motivational interviewing techniques. We teach job classes. We help people learn how to identify you know, when they're starting to see symptoms before they get to a crisis moment. So I think it's a combination of many things. But we really at WBS put a lot of focus on professional development for our employment consultants. So, you know, new things are happening in the field all the time. We're always trying to get people out there to put more tools in their toolbox on how to support individuals with various mental health disorders, as well as all types of disability support needs. So
So when you're placing somebody in a job, have you found it difficult to find advocates within that new employment scenario?
Sometimes. The other thing is retention's not always really good. So we might find somebody and that's, you know, very effective and then they leave. Oftentimes we've had managers. We place somebody and the manager is just completely supportive, you know, just employs best practices on supporting individuals with disabilities, and then they're transferred to another store, and we get somebody in, and we get a phone call that somebody's about ready to lose their job. You know, I've been written up twice suddenly, and we have to go back in and just kind of start from the beginning again, and just you know, or maybe there was an unwritten accommodation that the manager then now is like, well, no, I'm not going to do that. Yeah. So we have to jump through all those hoops again to make sure that the person has the support they need in the job.
That seems like it would be really difficult. So let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to start giving to Washington Vocational Services. I think it's entirely possible.
Oh, that would be right.
Yeah. Yes. So what do donations do for your organization?
Well, a great deal. So for instance, some of the scenarios I mentioned of when we, you know, maybe there's a crisis and we have to jump back in before there's any kind of plan in place. We don't get any reimbursement for that. There's no funding. So there's a lot of unfunded needs that we end up doing. Individuals with mental health, when they first come to us often, you know, the thing with mental health is it's a domino for so many other things. And you know, drug addiction, homelessness. So many times we're working on all those kinds of things on the side, and what we're funded for is to find the person a job.
Yeah.
What we're not paid for is to help them stop sleeping in the car so they can
yeah.
go to an interview
yeah.
or
yeah.
to, you know, get clothes to go interviewing. So a lot of times there's just a lot of unfunded services. So, you know, we do one fundraiser a year with the hopes of bringing in funds to try to help us with those unfunded needs.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in occasions we've had individuals who just access to services, wait lists they're on. And, you know, when you hear you're on a wait list for 4 months and you need a job yesterday because you are living in your car,
mm-hmm.
You know, that's really discouraging.
Right.
So we have to come up with real creative ways on, you know, how can we support this person and still make
yeah.
payroll
yeah.
To our staff at the end of the day. So,
yeah.
So donations help with unfunded needs and underfunded.
Yeah.
We have many programs that just are underfunded for what the support we're providing for,
yeah.
for individuals.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
So do you have any upcoming events or programs that you want to highlight before we go?
We just finished our annual. We did today our second annual auction, Toast mm-hmm. to Abilities. It's in October, and we will be doing one again next October. But
very
I wish
nice.
It was a little sooner.
I know. That,
so I could say,
that's all right.
Come on down and buy your tickets.
We're going to give everybody 10 months to prep.
Yeah. Save the date. So I think it's October 16th this year. We just set the date yesterday.
Cool.
Okay.
So we'll be putting on our website.
Excellent.
Save the date information. And so that's a big one as far as an event. That's kind of our biggest.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much
yeah,
for making the trip down and being
fun.
On the podcast and talking about this very important work that you guys are doing. We really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that was the team from Washington Vocational Services. Really good conversation around employment and keeping jobs for folks who have mental health issues. I will say that is, in my experience, also one of the tougher things for people who struggle with mental health and anxiety
yeah.
and depression and bipolarism is the aspect of, like, it's a tough enough mountain to, like, get the job.
Yeah.
It is definitely the maintenance of that job,
yeah.
which I think sometimes is really hard. Because
people forget about that.
Yeah, because the walls start to close in on you or mm-hmm. you feel this pressure of, like, continued success.
Yeah.
Right? So there's the initial rush of doing a job really well or
mm-hmm.
getting a job. And then the tougher part sometimes is the idea of, like, there will be down moments at the job
yeah.
or there will be.
How do you prepare for that?
Yeah. And so I think that that was really interesting in talking to them about that. We kind of hit on a few of the statistics when we were talking. It
yeah.
doesn't seem good
no.
for Washington State. So, Heather, why don't you hit us with some Washington State facts and figures?
So it was something like, of course, researching this stuff, I, you know, pull up a bunch of figures in the past, talking with different subjects throughout the two seasons we've been on.
Mm-hmm.
Washington is really great at a lot of stuff.
I know. We're pretty awesome.
Like, I think, you know, 15th is the lowest. Like,
yeah,
for a
usually,
lot of random
yeah.
things, you know,
right.
like our environmental impacts.
We're killing on the environment.
How we do for, you know, other things that just, I don't know, like mental health, it's not good here.
Yeah, it's weird.
So, for the nation, 18% of adults have a mental health condition.
That feels low to me, by the way.
It's probably underreported.
Yeah.
I would say
yeah,
because, you know, there's
low.
Stigmas about
right.
it. Nobody wants to say, oh, yeah,
I have, mental
I have mental health issues.
Right.
Because then, you know, like, do I go on a list?
Yeah.
Am I, like, am I going to be, like, treated a
yeah.
certain way because
yep.
of this? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's over 43 million Americans.
Okay.
Okay. So, and 9.6 million Americans experience suicidal ideation.
Wow.
So because of just anxiety, depression,
yeah.
bipolar, schizophrenia, what have you, like there's almost 10% of people are just
mm-hmm.
like, no, I'm thinking about suicide. And most Americans lack access to care. 56%
yeah.
of American adults with a mental illness did
mm-hmm.
not receive treatment.
Wow.
So.
Wow. More than half.
More than half.
Wow.
Almost 60%, right? So we're
mm-hmm.
we're up there. So there's this report for Mental Health in America
mm-hmm.
that lists all the states and District of Columbia. The best state with a low prevalence of mental illness and higher rates of access to care.
Mm-hmm.
What state do you think that is?
Oh,
I'll
man.
Give you a hint.
Okay.
It's one of the original 13 colonies.
Oh, wow. Let's go with, so I feel.
History nerd.
Nice job. it feels like something that probably has like a more metropolitan area. So mm-hmm. I'm going to say can't be New York. They're all crazy there.
No, it's not.
How about Massachusetts? Did I get it?
You did.
Bam! Yeah!
Nice. New York ranks 13th.
Wow.
So not too bad, but yeah. Massachusetts is number one.
Get out of here. Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Bam.
All right. So Washington's number 34 on that list. So not great.
No, that's not great at all. It's 16 from the bottom.
All right. So
who's last place?
They're on the west, not on the coast, but they're western.
Oh.
They're like the bottom half of the list is western and southern states. Really.
Wow. Well,
yeah,
okay.
Lots of western and southern.
How about let me guess who's last place. I'm going to say Montana or Wyoming.
No, but they are low.
What was that?
Montana. Let's see, where's Montana?
Oh yeah, you look like you're at the bottom there.
27 is Montana. Uh-huh. Wyoming is 31. So they're better than
Washington.
So
they still beat Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, who's worse?
Nevada.
Mm, yeah. Lots of problems out
and
there in Nevada.
And on this little graph, there's jumps compared to the next closest one, which is Mississippi.
Wow.
So I'll post this information.
Yeah,
so
that's pretty neat. I like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
wow, Washington, come on now.
Yeah.
We can be better than
Wyoming
totally and Montana.
Yeah. So for Washington State, of course, I said like, you know, less than half are receiving care that they need.
Yeah.
And in the country, 45,000 people lost their lives to suicide in 2016.
Wow.
Which is far more than homicide.
Yeah.
So 45,000 suicide, 19,000 homicide in 2016. And suicide rates have climbed by 28% since 1999, with Washington carrying a relatively high suicide rate.
Mm.
There's about 12 to 14 deaths per 100,000. Other states are as low as 6.
Wow.
So there's something happening in Washington that people just are not getting help that they need.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, for some of this, I mean, we talked a little bit about preventative care. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, if you have heart problems, you're going to get some care, preventative care, that kind of a thing. But timely care when it comes to mental health isn't really a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the stigmas and, like, mm-hmm. you know, failing to recognize, oh, this is an actual illness, not just something that just happened once mm-hmm. or continues to happen kind of a thing.
Wow.
So in 2014, we talked a little bit about inpatient with the Washington Vocational Services.
Mm-hmm.
There's 9.1 inpatient psychiatric beds per 100,000 people. So we're 46 out of 50 states.
46th?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And there was this talk about a place in Tacoma getting 120 new beds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still under construction. It was supposed to be completed this year, but it's still under construction.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's not good. And then as far as mental health resources in Washington, close to 5.1% of adults in Washington live with conditions that are serious, like schizophrenia, bipolar, and major depression.
Wow.
And then, our access to healthcare is terrible. So there's this other cool data graph
mm-hmm.
report. But in all of this information, like serious thoughts of suicide, use of drug, like heroin or alcohol, mental health consumers, serious mm-hmm. mental illness, Washington ranks higher than the United States average in everything.
Wow.
So... That sucks.
Man, alive.
And it definitely makes sense why, like recently, Inslee mm-hmm. proposed to have more mental health counseling and more mental health treatment and actually paying attention to this as a crisis or an epidemic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what was crazy was when we were talking with Washington Vocational Services offline, mm-hmm. they'd mentioned that half of the counties in Washington State do not have a psychiatrist working in it.
That's insanity.
That's bananas.
There are 39 counties.
That's bananas.
You're telling me we don't have 39 psychiatrists
that could work in those counties?
Like,
that's insanity.
It is insanity.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, a little shout out to Inslee and the legislative crew. I mean, while you're working on the education piece, throw a little mental health in there as well.
Exactly.
We could definitely use it.
Yeah, because I mean, it's definitely something that it doesn't matter where you live, where you're from, who you know, mm-hmm. what you do. It affects everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's as with most of the issues that we deal with when we talk to different charities, it crosses all
mm-hmm.
socioeconomic, racial, political party mm-hmm. lines. It transcends all of that stuff. It's real legitimate issues that anybody and everybody can fall prey to.
And you never know when stress in your life is going to cause panic attacks or episodes of depression or anxiety.
Absolutely.
Or maybe even become a worse serious mental health issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing I will say is that perhaps we will start to see more funding and more attention dedicated to it as people who are high profile mm-hmm. start to go through it themselves. You saw a couple of the NBA players mm-hmm. Kind of come out and really legitimately talk about it. Kevin Love is one that comes to mind right off the top of my mm-hmm. head. Just this weekend, you had that Saturday Night Live actor, Pete Davidson, he is, tweet or Instagram or whatever he did. I think it was Instagram. He, posted a pretty, dark message. And in those instances, can these people become, even by accident, can they become sort of spokespeople for mental health issues? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that'll be interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where this all goes. It's as we kind of talked about, it's a mysterious thing that I think sometimes, since there's no way of knowing where it comes from and how mm-hmm. it ends, it's very difficult to put a system in place to try and solve that.
Yeah.
You know,
and to have a system that can address multiple things at the same time.
Yeah, because it deals with all of the factors. And what was really interesting in hearing from Kate Walker was the idea that, like, there's all these stressors that mm-hmm. that bring mental health into the fold. So you really have to work on solving those stressors too.
Yeah, and she's right. Like, having a therapist talk with you once a week for an hour.
Yeah.
That may not be
enough.
Enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally
by
true.
By any means.
Totally true. So we got work to do, Washington.
Yeah.
Let's get our business together.
Yeah, we can do it in 2019.
Yeah, 2019 as opposed to 2018. It's already over.
It's over.
So we don't have any sort of major upcoming events at this point. We will give you a kind of a nice little shout out to folks. Last week to give was December 3rd through 7th. Our campaign yet again looks like it's going to be between 5.3 and maybe even 5.5, fingers crossed out there. Another excellent campaign. Thank you to everyone for participating. We had Stuff the Ruck on December 13th down here in Olympia. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. We had 1,000 toys and $3,600 in recurring donations get generated for Toys for Tots. And then the CFD, some of you may have tried to call in on Wednesday and Thursday on December 19th or 20th and got our answering machine. That was because our answering machine, what am I, 1997?
Yeah, you're stuck
did
in
I
at
say
least 92.
Answering machine? Wow.
Yeah, you did.
What the hell was that? You may have gotten our voicemail. Sorry. But that was because the CFD did its annual retreat. So for those of you who are volunteers or donors, you'll be seeing the fruits of that conversation coming up over the next couple months. We are, of course, excited to unveil the new theme and the leadership breakfast theme and all of those really cool things that we put together when we sit down as a team and kind of work all that stuff out.
Yeah.
So for those of you listening and have listened through 2018, you listen to our regular podcasts every 2 weeks and then to our very intense daily drip during the campaign. We really want to thank you for continuing to really embrace the issues in a different way, listening to charities, really tackle these issues. We want to thank all the charities that came on.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really inspiring stuff to see some of these organizations really doing incredible work in the community.
Yes, thank you, charities. It's going to be great also moving into 2019 with the podcasts that we're going to talk about, the topics that we're going to unveil in the future.
So, Heather, why don't you take a second before we leave to talk about the new thing we're going to be doing with our podcast content next year. So what are we doing?
So we have found that sometimes when we talk with two charities, we are kind of duplicating some of the conversation. So mm-hmm. we wanted to make it a little more specific and a little more individualized for charities who come on the podcast. Next year, we're mm-hmm. going to be having individual one-off charities talking about one single topic.
Yeah.
And we're going to be airing podcasts once a week.
Excellent.
So they're going to be airing on Tuesdays, which is different than now, Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
But we're probably going to end up with, hopefully, 52 finished podcasts.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
And then any specials that we actually end up doing will kind of fit in between everything.
Yeah. So look for that. We're excited about it because it's an opportunity to highlight one specific charity And have the listeners hear it in a different way.
Yeah,
so.
And to talk about more topics,
yes.
Having more topics out there too,
because
we have, what is it, 4,500 member charities? Mm-hmm. So yeah. The more we can talk about different topics is always the best.
Yes. So that is it, people. Thank you for listening throughout 2018.
Yeah.
We will see you in 2019.
Bye.
Bye.